he just, this instructor, he was just a motivating guy. He was an athlete. And he said, you're about to go to war for the first time, and the enemy's all your doubts, all your fears, and everyone you know back home that told you you weren't good enough to do this. Keep your head down, keep moving forward no matter what, never quit, and you'll be fine. And another one he said was, you know, don't quit now, quit tomorrow. If you can keep quitting tomorrow, you can do anything.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet by learning from high performers in a variety of industries. Our next guest is Robert J. O'Neill. Rob is a true American hero. He served our country as a Navy SEAL and received 2 Silver Stars, among many other awards. He was a part of high-profile missions, including saving Marcus Luttrell, which was detailed in the book and movie Lone Survivor, saving Captain Phillips, and oh yeah, he shot Osama bin Laden. You will be inspired by his story, pushing through adversity and showing up in the biggest moments in life when it matters most. Rob has an incredible sense of humor and could tell a story with the best of them. It was an honor to record this episode, and you, as the listeners, are in for a treat. There are over 100,000 new podcasts being released each week, so it means a lot to me that you spent your time tuning into this episode. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast and share it on social media to help spread the impact. Enjoy. Rob, welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks for having me, Eric. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's an absolute honor to have you on. I've been looking forward to this. Your career speaks for itself. Everyone got to hear about it through the intro, but we're going to start off where we do with all the guests on the show. Tell me about where you're from and what sport you grew up playing.
I am from Butte, Montana. That's the same hometown as one of your former teammates, Colt Anderson.
Yep, we got to honor Colt, coaching for the Bengals now. He's the one who made this connection, so thank you,
Colt Anderson. And he's just the man. He's like the most likable, friendliest, shirt off his back, best-looking dude there is. Like, he's just an awesome guy.
He is.
I love his story, too. I'm sure you've talked about how he was a walk-on at the University of Montana after losing every game his senior year, then made it to the NFL. That's a great story.
It is, truly.
I'm not stealing his thunder, though.
Right. So what kind of athlete were you growing up?
I played a lot of basketball. And I credit that with being a reason I was good at shooting, because I was really good at shooting free throws. Free throws is muscle memory, and shooting anything is muscle memory. And it's always, if you want to be good at something, do it 1,000 times. If you want to be great at something, do it 10,000 times. And so my father and I, he played at the University of Montana, basketball also. And when I was in high school, we would play every day. And our rule was at the end of our practice, however long our session was, 2 or 3 hours, one of us had to make 20 free throws in a row, which is, I mean, it can take 2 minutes, it could take another hour.
Right.
But just doing that, you know, the system, you know, dribble, spin, bend, and then it's all up to, we used to have an argument, what do you look at, the ball or the rim? And I would keep my eye on the rim, he'd look at the ball. But we got good at it to a point where I think he set the family record 1 week for 91 free throws in a row. And then wow. The following week, I made 105. But I if I had to describe for me life as a sport, it would be one word, free throws. If that's one word, it's a hyphenated word.
Yeah. Hit the free throws in life. Take what life gives you. You got to make your free throws. That's an area of the basketball court that you control what happens. You know, I always used to say in football, there's no way to prepare for everything that's going to happen for a game. But if you go in unprepared, you are yes. going to fail. John Wooden always says, if you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail.
Yes.
And I love those stories. I've heard you talk about them before with your dad shooting free throws. And it's amazing. That's another metaphor for life, too. It's like you guys started out at 20, and 20 was a lot. Mm-hmm. But then once you start popping hurdles in life, once you start conquering things, then yeah. you never know. You know, Goggins always says the 40% rule, and he found out about himself in SEAL training. You guys went well above the 40%. You went 5 times over it. But – what led you to join the military? I heard about a breakup, maybe.
Yeah, I got dumped by a girl. And it was one of those times. I was actually playing basketball at Montana Tech, which is in Butte, Montana. And it's just one of those times in life where it's just, I just got to get out of this place. And a lot of people join the military, not because of a girl or a guy or a breakup, just because I'm just over it. And everywhere I've traveled, especially around the country, someone says that somewhere. I just got to get out of this place. We all feel like that at some point in our lives, and you just got to go do something, go on an adventure. And being from Butte, Montana, I mean, it was all an accident. Life happens around you when you're planning. I tried to join the Marine Corps because I thought Marines are just awesome. I love the uniforms, love the haircut. I love the way they marched. So I went to join the Marine Corps, but the Marine wasn't in the office. He was literally out to lunch, and the Navy guy was. And I went in to ask the Navy guy where the Marine was. And he pretty much tricked me into joining the Navy. He said, "Why do you want to be a Marine?" I said, "I want to be a sniper." He said, "Well, we have snipers in the Navy. You need to become a Navy SEAL first. After that, we'll send you to sniper school." And he kind of brushed over that whole thing. But it was, again, it's a decision I pretty much made one afternoon. And then I shipped out a few weeks later, but I signed the paper that day, and it's like this Navy. And I had access to the pool at Montana Tech, and I went up there every morning at about 5 a.m. to try to learn how to swim because I didn't know how. I could keep myself alive. I didn't know any strokes. No one had ever taught me anything. So that was it. And then, I get to the Navy, and I realize, even at boot camp, which isn't SEAL training, that doesn't matter who you are, everyone has their first day. Everyone's got their first day at training camp. Every CEO's had their first day at the job. The guy that went into Bin Laden's bedroom, first day, nervous, not sure what to think. But if you spend enough time somewhere, you will get comfortable with it. And it's just outside the box, get outside your comfort zone. I realized the dude from Chicago is the same as the guy from Miami and the dude from LA, the guy from Butte, Montana. You keep a positive attitude, you can pretty much do whatever you want. I mean, there is, LeBron and dudes like that that are just, 6'10 and have a 40-inch vertical. That's not me. But most people are not in the top 1% like that. I've seen them. And in the NFL, you've seen them. Just complete freaks that don't – I'm sure you've seen guys that don't even need to work out, and they're the fastest dude out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Terrell Owens was the most jacked dude on our team, and he only worked out with bands because if he would weight train, one, he'd get more stiff. He's naturally so big. As a receiver, he doesn't need to be any bigger than 225 pounds and 6'3", 6'4". So he just trained with bands. I'm trying to stay above 300 pounds, back squatting during the season, trying to keep some weight on, and he's in there just doing these band workouts. But I used to always say the exact same thing. I'd say God doesn't bless many people with like a total package. Like LeBron is competitive, he's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he's smart, he's the total package. But God doesn't bless many people that way. I'm thinking of a Mario Williams who I played with. I mean, that dude's a freak of nature. We'd step on the scale and we'd both be 6'4", right around 300 pounds, just looks way different, looking like a defensive end that's all chiseled up. And I get on this dumpy white dude next, and I'm like, well, we played for different positions and God blessed us in different ways. But I've always been enamored with this budge training and what gets people through those things. You mentioned being comfortable. You got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. But man, I love when you say, like, when you go to train for buds, don't just start doing cold showers because it's gonna suck regardless.
Yes.
So
it's gonna suck when we get there. There's certain things you don't get used to, and that's one of them. Don't torture yourself for no reason. And I learned very early on that you don't bite off more than you can chew. Don't think, I gotta make it to this bowl game, or I gotta make it to graduation. Like, I gotta make it to breakfast. There's my first goal in life, because I already made my bed. I already brushed my teeth, and I woke up on time. I won three times a day. Now I've got to make it to breakfast. And I had an instructor say that, and he said, regardless of what you've been told, this course is not impossible. People graduate. Look at me. You can do it. So I'll never ask you to do anything impossible. It's just something very hard, followed by something very hard, followed by something very hard. That's just what he said, one step at a time. Even before we started Hell Week, which is it's a famous part of SEAL training that starts on Sunday and you don't really sleep until Friday. Up and you're like carrying boats in your head. You run a couple marathons during the course of 5.5 days. And he's just a motivating guy. He was an athlete. And he said, you're about to go to war for the first time, and the enemy's all your doubts, all your fears, and everyone you know back home that told you you weren't good enough to do this. Keep your head down. Keep moving forward no matter what. Never quit, and you'll be fine. And another one he said was, don't quit now. Quit tomorrow. If you can keep quitting tomorrow, you can do anything. That's it. I mean, it's just keep it simple. I just made a shirt today that says KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
When we were even at SEAL Team 6, we're fighting the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS guys. And they're adjusting to our tactics. So they'll meet us on the battlefield, gunfights, they'll see what we do, they change. And we kept changing our tactics based on, it's like watching film. And we were trying to think of a way, a very dangerous position in close quarters combat, is if you're parallel on the train, do two groups of good guys go, because if you turn in on each other, you can shoot. And we're like, how do we deconflict? You knock on the door, but that's stupid because we'll wake them up. You don't put a chem light. And I was like, I have an idea. How about you don't shoot anyone who looks like you? If he has a helmet and night vision, he's one of your guys. It's okay if you point at him. Don't pull the trigger. We'll just be smart about being stupid. How about that? Keep it simple.
That's hilarious. And so practical. And there's so many great things you said in there about quitting tomorrow, because there's so many times you quit in the moment and you wish you wouldn't have. I'm sure there are so many guys that you watch lay down their helmets and ring that bell that the next day had some serious regret about it, but in the moment they couldn't take it anymore. And there's no judgment on that.
Not at all.
Yeah, they were willing to do something that so many people aren't even willing to put themselves out there to even try.
Yes, so, I know. And they did too. I actually met the first quitter I ever met, because a lot of guys will say, yeah, the instructors didn't like me or blah, 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 this bullshit. I met a dude on a Navy ship, my first deployment, and he saw my trident. We're having chow, and he said, I went to Buzz. I'm like, you did, huh? What happened? He goes, I quit. And I'm like, why'd you quit? And he goes, I don't know. I lost my hoo-yah. I was like, that's a good answer. Fair enough. But the way I would think about it is your helmet in SEAL training is, it's a helmet, it's your class number. Mine was 208, and then it's your last name. O'Neill. So, and once you ring the bell to quit, you put it down in the quitter's line. And I said, there's no way I can put a helmet with my father's name on it in the quitter's line. I can't, you know. And people will, you know, always the tough guy, no fear. Do you ever think about quitting? I'm like, every fucking second I thought about quitting. Yes, it's miserable. But, you know, you just don't.
Yeah, so you had those moments thinking about quitting. What was the hardest part of the Buds experience? I mean, Hell Week, obviously. When I was reading your book, to me, the drown proofing, that might have been it for me.
I was comfortable drown proofing because that's about an hour, even though you're tied up, hands behind your back, feet together. That's an hour underwater, really, where no one can yell at you. And if you can control your breathing, all they're teaching you through negative reinforcement is that panicking will not help. So don't panic. And if you can stay calm there, just feel yourself breathe, listen to your heartbeat, touch the bottom. You know, you can sing little songs in your head or cadence. I mean, the hardest part is floating. When you're, you know, hands behind your back and your lungs are here, trying to float is difficult. That's 5 minutes of floating and you can't touch the bottom. But other than that, I didn't have a problem with that. I thought the hardest part was the last 40 days, which is on San Clemente Island, which is off the coast of California. And Buds, basically underwater demolition SEAL training, it's on one of the nicest beaches in front of an awesome hotel, the Hotel Del Coronado. And they torture you there in front of people. When you go out to the island, there's no days off, and their motto is no one can hear you scream out here. And they can be as demented as they want. And it seems like the later the day we got, the instructor smelled a little bit more like whiskey. So it's like, whatever. And they would just do stuff. They had a fun one they like to do that you need to get wet and sandy every hour on the hour for 24 hours. And that sounds okay, whatever, but that's every single hour you're not sleeping, you're there for 40 straight days. And it's just a really long time. The good news is they're only feeding you meat, water and milk basically. So that's when you get jacked. You put some good size on. They're trying to unbreak you from all the broken you've been through, but they do torture you out there. I didn't like that one. No one really talks about it because it's so close to the end. Once it's over, SEAL training's over and you're off to your SEAL team.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot about that. That's not in a lot of books. It's not in a lot of talks that you hear SEALs do. It's talking about that island. Man, that's fascinating to me that, you know, they break you down, they build you back up. But when you think about it, when you talk about the people that are going to, we're going to put in our most important positions overseas defending this country, those are the types of people you want. You want to make sure that you're getting the best, the toughest, the most calloused guys over there. Because in anything, there's going to be stuff that goes wrong. There's going to be future extremely uncomfortable situations. And, you know, I want this to be a fun podcast for you. I've heard you on a bunch of podcasts, so I'm not going to ask you to go through the whole Bin Laden story and all of that. I do want you to talk about it. I do some performance coaching now, and I work with some teams, and a lot of it's around emotion and not making moments bigger than they are and preparing yourself for those moments. So when you find out eventually that the thing that they found in the referring to it is we found this thing in a place and it's all this generic language. When you find out it's Osama bin Laden, how do you keep your emotion in check when even preparation and then going over there, knowing that this guy has accounted for so many lost American lives and innocent people around the world?
It's just living in the bubble. Everyone I know is doing the same job. And it's normal to go out and shoot a bunch of people. And so this is just a bigger target. When they told us, when I heard the commanding officer say, the reason you guys are here is because this is as close as we've ever been to Osama bin Laden. You just kind of looked around and no one's cheering. It's kind of like, cool, we're going right now. I'm ready. Because we've been fighting so much everywhere. We fought so much in Iraq and Afghanistan that we were ready for it. And then the emotion sort of comes with the realization that we're probably not going to come home and you need to make peace with that. But what we talked about, because it's a one-way mission, like we're going to get shot down. Mm-hmm. We're going to get in a fight. As soon as we get there, gunfire, if the whole place is going to blow up, at least we're going to run out of fuel. That's a scary part because then we're stuck in Pakistan. And we're either going to fight it out with the PAC police or end our lives in jail, short lives. And the guy that actually was in front of me going up the final set of stairs said, "I don't take this wrong. I'm going 100% going on the mission. I just need to say it to hear it. If we know we're going to die, why are we going?" Mm. And that was fair. And we decided that we're not going for the fame. We're not going for the reward that we'll never see. We're going after Osama bin Laden for the single mom who dropped her kids off at elementary school on a Tuesday morning. And then 45 minutes later, she jumped to her death out of a skyscraper because that was a better alternative than whatever's, we'll never know what's going on inside at 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. Her last gesture of human decency was holding her skirt down. Mm. And we kind of looked at each other and we're like, she was never supposed to be in the fight. We are supposed to be in the fight, and that's why we're going. And it's almost one of those Braveheart moments, like, okay, what if you could pull yourself off anytime? You don't need to go. But if you pull yourself off now and you're dying at 95, would you trade every single day for one more night and that mission? And yes, this is what, and we're all like, you know, this is why we're here. And guys that pulled themselves off the mission before they knew what the mission was, they'll never forgive themselves because they thought we were doing something. They made up the biggest bullshit stories of what we're doing. We thought we were going to Libya. We thought there was something in Japan or some weird shit. And so guys are like, well, I'm running a trip in January, so I'm just going to yank myself. I don't need to. They thought it was we call a spin-up. And it turned out it's a bin Laden, and you're going. And it was a great group of guys. But with all the missions, like we're talking about the never quit, keeping your emotions in check. When we went after Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, on the mountain, 10 hours or so into a hike in 100-degree heat, going up to 10,000 feet, I remember talking to guys like, this is why training is so hard, because if we wanted to quit right now, where are we going to go? We're just here now. We're in Afghanistan, and we're on a mountain with a bunch of people that want to kill us. We're trying to find our friends.
Man, that's powerful. And I thank you for your willingness to go over there and put your body on the line. And you take it for granted and you hear these stories, but someone's got to be willing to do that, to defend this country and allow us to live in these freedoms where we can sit around on a Monday and record a podcast in peace. Someone's got to be out there protecting this country. So I appreciate that. So the mission becomes complete. You kill bin Laden, you guys get out of there. It doesn't go perfectly to plan, but ultimately you did what you went over there to do. What's the next few days look like when you've literally changed the course of history?
We flew right home. We brought the bin Laden's body back to Jalalabad Airfield to show Admiral McCraven, who was actually running the operation from there, and to show the woman that found bin Laden. She's real. She's a real person that really found him, that gave up her life to find him. And that was a moment there, too, to show her, because she was not married, no kids, all because of, like, recruited out of high school for this. That's the only thing she ever did. And then we're walking over to the body. And in, like, the movie Zero Dark Thirty, she said she looked at bin Laden's body and had a moment and cried and got on the plane. That's not at all what happened. We walked over there, and I was feeling the pressure of an arrogant Navy SEAL, like, well, I got to think of something cool to say. I gave her the magazine out of my gun, pointed at bin Laden. I thought this would have been cool enough, and I said, is that your guy? And she looked down for a second. Keep in mind, her entire life was spent finding him, and she looked down for a second, and went, well, I guess I'm out of a job, and she left.
Wow.
Yeah, just done. And then we brought him up to Bagram Airfield, where the three-letter agency people were. Federal law enforcement guys are going to do the DNA test. Like, the boss is on the phone with the White House, and we're trying to figure it out. I'm eating a breakfast sandwich, and President Obama came down the red carpet, and I'll never forget it. I'm standing at basically 2 feet from bin Laden, and he said, tonight I can report to the American people and to the world the United States conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of al-Qaeda. I hear the president say Osama bin Laden. I look at Osama bin Laden, and I thought, how the f*** did I get here from Butte, Montana? You know, just one of those, always keep yourself available. You never know what can happen. I heard a quote, I don't know where to give it credit, but wherever you are, be there. And, you know, just you can get called. It was, you know, there was a lot of different people that could have done that mission. I happened to be in the right rotation with the right group of senior guys that they picked. And like we're saying with the redundancy, you got to be prepared for whatever, you know, if you're not prepared, you got nothing.
Right. And you were a part of three super high profile missions, this being the pinnacle. But leading up to that, you saved Marcus Luttrell, which was made famous with The Lone Survivor, saving Captain Phillips, which became a big time Hollywood movie. And then Operation Neptune Spear, where you shoot Osama bin Laden. So, so many people would say, man, there's a number of Navy SEALs out there. Is that a lucky position that you were in to be in all three? I would say that you were prepared and those opportunities came. Yeah. How do you feel about that? Because you just mentioned it, like, how did I get here from Butte, Montana? Yeah. So there's some
I just wouldn't put myself in a position to be at a different command. And nothing against guys that do that. Some people take breaks and they go to be an instructor somewhere, which is great because we're all going to combat, we're all going to war. I just knew that if I stuck around long, like my mindset was, if I stick around long enough, meaning at SEAL Team 6, maybe I'll meet the guy from Delta Force who kills bin Laden. Something like that, right? It's never going to be this team. But we did. I was, you know, Good Friday, April 10th, 2009, which is my birthday, my daughter's Easter tea party at her preschool. We got a call when I'm bringing her donuts or something, candy, and Captain Richard Phillips had been taken by Somali pirates. And we got the message. And then 15 hours and 46 minutes later, we had our team in the Indian Ocean. And then on Easter Sunday, we rescued him with some shots from our snipers. And we're talking about preparation. What's cool about this, we had never done that. SEAL Team 6 was designed to rescue Americans at sea, but we had never done it, and that's over 25 years. Imagine this. And the snipers weren't the option. We put them on the fantail in case something dangerous happens, you got to be there.
Right.
And they were in their own beds at Virginia Beach 4 days on a long weekend. We've never done this. I'll skip work today and drink beer. I'll sight in my weapon on Tuesday. We did over 25 years because complacency kills. Their guns did not need to be sighted in for the most difficult shots of their lives, but their guns were sighted in for the most difficult shots of their lives because they were prepared for it. And if, like, what if they weren't?
Right.
That's a tough, those are three tough shots from three serious dudes too.
Absolutely. That is wild to me. And when you were talking about being with your daughter at her school, you know, oftentimes it's tough for football players to transition out of football and live a life where you never get to hit somebody again. You're never competing. You never feel the rush of running out into a stadium. Well, those things pale in comparison to I'm sitting out of school and now I have to go prepare for a mission to save a guy's life and yeah. Do what I'm called to do. How hard was it for you to flip that switch on and off?
Well, we didn't know what we were going to do. Cause like I said, it had been over 25 years and we trained a lot on it. We've done those jumps a lot. But we thought of everything. We thought of cruise liners, nuclear ships, a submarine, yachts. We never thought of a fully engulfed sea lifeboat being towed by a Navy destroyer. So on the flight over, it's like, okay, everybody come up with a plan. We have 16 hours. Everyone come up and we'll just start narrowing it down what makes the most sense. And, you know, and the snipers were just a watch, like just, you got to have guns on these guys. And it was even to the point where we're sending our, like, sometimes we joke about it and say, you know, Jesus was a frog man. Cause like we get lucky. It's the whole, you know, I'll trip over my, but I'll land in $1 million. So, the ship's company were out to sea and they were having a beard growing contest. And so they would send the regular Navy guys out there and they would try to converse with the pirates and come back. And then all of a sudden our guys come on, they have beards, no one notices. But it's just because the captain of the ship happened to be cool and said, let's grow beards. And then when we got there, and even Captain Phillips recognized these are different dudes. And he kind of asked our guys, where are you from? And they said, well, we're from where you're from, meaning Norfolk, Virginia. And he goes, I was waiting for you guys. But then, you know, we didn't know what, I wanted to drop them off on land somewhere and then be on land waiting for them. I really had nothing to do with it. I was the lead jumper to get us in there. I jumped out of the plane and led the stack into the four boats. But then I basically was drinking coffee and I got a text that said, we got him. I'm like, got who? So, oh, you got him. Super.
Which is a fascinating story when you tell it and you're parachuting down and you can't see the boats and you have 100 men following you and but you can't panic. You can't let them know that you haven't seen the boats yet. That's a fascinating story.
It doesn't matter what you're thinking, if you can portray calm, your guys will be calm. Because like panic is contagious, but so is calm. And if one person freaks out, everyone freaks out. But if you just stay calm and act like you're supposed to be here, you know, we'll just be, and another one too, even with the Bin Laden raid, I didn't know the helicopter crashed in the front yard, and I was going to blow the door open to the courtyard. And I said, hey, this is so-and-so, we're going to blow the carport. They said, don't blow it, we'll open it. And it opened and the thumb came out. And it's one of those things, I love sports analogies. It's like in football. It doesn't matter why it's second and 15 right now. It just is.
Right.
We can talk about it after the game. It doesn't matter how my team got in there. They're just in there. So let's go. So just the whole prep, like the scariest thing imaginable happened, and we were able to pull it off because of the preparation.
Let me take a moment now to let you know about a product that I used when I was playing in the NFL and still use to this day, and that is UCAN. UCAN fueled me while I was playing with its patented super starch that does not spike your blood glucose, gives you consistent energy, and controls cravings. It would give me that edge I needed in practice and in workouts, and especially on game day. Now I use it to fuel me in everyday life, and especially my times around workouts and big golf matches. Use the link in the show notes and use code ERIC25 to get 25% off your purchase. Go live your optimal life by using the best energy source out there, and that is from the products by UCAN. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. It's amazing how you could tell the stories now and laugh about it and joke about it, make awesome analogies, but how intense those moments when they're life and death in those moments. I talk about big moments in football, but they're never life and death, you know. But I loved how you said you just got to do it with confidence. I made all the line calls as a center. I would often make checks for our offense and help out the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes guys would look at me crazy, and I'm like, just do it. The play clock's running down. If we're all wrong together, it's probably going to be right. But we at least all got to be on the same page, because if someone second guesses me and half the line goes one way and half goes the other way, we're probably all getting cut tomorrow. So just do what I say. We'll figure it out later.
If we screw up, let's do it at 100 miles an hour.
So you do a good amount of speaking now. You've been on Fox News. You use your platform extremely well. But how tough was the transition out of the military?
Yeah, it was hard because, you know, that was such a big mission that there's going to be some animosity. I wasn't used to it at first, because we're in the shadows, silent warriors. And then, but when, to answer the question you asked a while back, when we got home, everybody already knew what happened, because someone would email someone or someone would call someone, and the first question everybody asked was, who got him? And that's actually funny to me now, because they're like, O'Neill got him. I'm like, fucking great, we're never gonna hear the end of this just because of the storytelling BS. But you know, we got back, everyone was really happy. We had different color squadrons. Red, we were red, there was blue, and blue was in town. They picked us up with pizzas, and one of the guys from blue brought out a bottle of Johnny Walker blue, and he said, I was saving this for something special. I think this qualifies. So we had that. We went out, you know, it was great until we really started to get limelight on us, and everyone wanted to do what we call a dog and pony show, flying everywhere, people coming down. They're also not letting people who went on the mission into the room for the briefs. That's insulting for someone that's been there for 15 to 20 years. He can't even come listen to this. And it really put a wedge in between a lot of us. And we're coming up on the anniversary right now, but then August 6th, 2011, we lost Extortion 17. 31 Americans were killed, most of them from our team, really good friends. And that just sent morale on a dive. You know, it just, we went from planning missions to planning funerals. Mm-hmm. And it was just horrible. Because that's, you get hit in one of those helicopters, it's over. I even had one regret I have in life. My friend Robert J. Reeves, I went to his house, and this is after the Bin Laden raid, and he asked me if I wanted a glass of wine. And I said, no, I don't know why. And he poured himself a glass of wine. He said, you know, one of these days, a lot of us are going to die on one of those helicopters. And that happened to him 2 weeks later. And Wow. It just, that just talk about you've seen, I'm sure, teams with bad morale. It doesn't work. Guys don't want to be there. They're not going to work hard. So that happened. And then we lost hundreds of years of combat experience right there. We had to move guys around to different teams. I went to a different squadron called Silver, and I went over. I extended another 6 months to go to war again. I just wanted to say, look, I am going to get out, but I came in through the front door. I'm leaving through the front door. This is the way I'm going. So I went over there and went back to combat, and you know, that's all I knew though. And that's actually why I started a foundation, because I got out at about 16 and a half years, no idea what I'm going to do. Like, am I going to sell sunglasses? I don't want to carry a gun again. Do I work at Blackwater? No idea. And But a lot of veterans have skills that employers want. They can manage stress. They know how to effectively communicate, and they know how to solve problems. And what we were good at is, as far as effective communication, if your people know what they're doing and why. Like, a lot of people don't want to tell you why you're doing something, which is just give them that much more. And one of my favorite rules for communication is, when you're done saying what you're saying, stop saying it. Get them to the point and shut up. Everyone loves to hear themselves talk.
For sure. And they would often tell us in interviews, if you ramble past what your original point was, you probably say something stupid that we didn't want you to say anyways. Yeah. And so just say what you're saying and then get out of there. And so you do a good amount of speaking now. And like you were saying, it's so appealing to businesses to have a guy like yourself come in. Obviously, you could tell stories. What are some of your main messages that you're getting across these businesses?
Be good to each other. If you want to have a good team, be nice. And I learned a lot with some of these senior guys the further, because I knew a lot of them in SEAL Team 2, and the older guys went over to 6, and I went to 6, and I'd known them forever, but they're my boss now. And, you know, when I screwed up, which everyone screws up a lot every day, instead of getting, like, if someone's going to come yell at me, I'll get defensive. But I had this one boss in particular that would say, well, I expected so much more out of you. And, like, leave it. I'm like, oh, God, I'll never, geez, head game. And then a boss that would say please and thank you, not all the time, but for normal work, like, great job in there. You really, you know that, let you know that you're a part of this team. Just little, be good to each other. And again, keeping it simple. One of the rules that I'll tell audiences this all the time: if you want to take notes, write this rule down. Nobody wants to work for a dick. Simple. It's so much easier to be nice. So that thing with morale, the thing with communication, the thing with the only time the perfect plan exists is in the planning room. When you leave to get on the field or go do what you're doing, everything's going to change. And just be for the preparation, and then don't quit. Like, just stay in the fight.
Yeah, it's appropriate for someone who was pushed beyond measure by sergeants and everything, by instructors, that most of people would say that they're dicks, that you're a prick. But they're pushing this out of you.
Yeah.
And then eventually, and it's detailed in the book, like what you're talking about on the island, at the hardest times, that's when they're building you back up. Hey, get the breakfast, get the lunch.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
in those easy times. And I'm often reminded of a quote: people don't care how much you know unless they know how much you care. And
wow, so that's good.
You got to build the relationship, and you got to, and then you can really hammer down. And I always tell businesses when I'm speaking now, I'm like, look, this generation of younger employers coming in, this is the social media. They got a bunch of likes. They have more Facebook friends than people you've even known in your life. They are not used to taking criticism. So you better have a relationship with them. I actually learned that from being
a very, very true captain
in the NFL for a number of years. And speaking of the NFL, so I understand you're a Washington fan, and yeah. And I know that there's maybe been a little bit of falling out, but Washington now has one of my favorite people in the entire world, my favorite quarterback I've played with. I hope that doesn't offend too many people listening.
That's awesome.
Yep. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He looks good, too. He looks really good.
Yes.
Yeah, I mine's more tongue-in-cheek because I was born a Washington fan, and I got angry because I don't like the woke. I think that too much woke ruins everything. If it's justified, fine. You know, I'm being a white kid from Montana, I've never been a victim of racism, so I'm not going to say I understand it. If someone's truly offended, fine. I was just pissed for a while because it's like, well, what am I doing with all these tattoos? But I love that organization. I even love FedEx just because it's big, but it's not really like they cut corners there. It's like not all decorated and all that good stuff. But I still watch them. I'm still cheering for them. But one of my hobbies, and I hope we really get back to this though, that my wife and I do, is we go to professional sporting events. Just, you know, I know the Dolphins really well, go down there quite a bit. We go to Celtics games, Bruins games, and Red Sox, and the Bears. We try to go to one a year. Kentucky Derby, just gatherings of people, because you mentioned social media. People are mean as shit on social media, but we get it together. Most people get along really well. Most people are fun, and they just want to have a good time. And that's what we like to do. I'll go to a Washington game again.
Hey, and I'll tell you what, next time you're in for the Kentucky Derby, your experience is on me, and we'll have a blast. And here's, you mentioned that everybody's having a good time at sporting events, and everyone's usually pretty cool. Well, everybody's cool at the Derby because there's no competing teams. Everybody is there to win money, have a few drinks, and so everybody's there to have fun. So there's no like competing fan bases there. Everybody's truly there to have a good time. I'm gonna ask you a few recurring questions, and then I'll get you out of here. Number one, what's your favorite book besides your own?
I read Eyes of the Dragon twice by Stephen King. I don't know why that book just jumped out at me like that. I read a lot of stuff. Like I'm reading a great book now on strategy, but it's about 2,000 pages. Anything like that. I love history books, but the one I remember the most was some Stephen King stuff, because I always wonder what it was like to be his little brother growing up scared shitless when the lights are out, because what's he whispering to you? So Stephen King's badass.
No doubt. What role does your faith play in your life?
That has ups and downs. Going overseas and seeing people kill each other based on not believing my religion, I kind of lost it for a while, but I'm getting back into it now. And I think where I am at now is, I talk to God every day, but it's not always in the same on your knees and do the sign of the cross. I was raised Catholic, but I'm convinced that God, it can be everything, not just your one. Like, I think that maybe we don't possess the mental capacity to understand what God is. And I've gone through some really good therapy for PTSD with some psychedelic stuff, and I'm convinced that you get to see some of it. I've made peace with friends that are dead doing some of this stuff, and it's I think everyone that's done anything semi-traumatic we need to get a lot of these psychedelics legalized to get just, it's kind of like you get a tour of your own body. So since I've been doing that, I've come closer to God, and I think we're all right and we're all wrong,
man. And when you're talking about overseas, I mean, that's religion. You're talking about relationship. You talk to God. Mm-hmm. And it's wild that you say that about the psychedelics. A Navy SEAL buddy of mine here in Louisville, Kentucky, just went down and was able to do the psychedelic treatments outside the country. That he experienced God through that. Similar to like what you said. And he said he got so much clarity in his life to where buddy of mine who played football, got into MMA fighting, had some serious glaucoma, head trauma, and everything else going on. He just did it, got back today, and said, brother, I can't wait to unpack this experience with you. I think I'm gonna nudge you to get down there, too.
I highly recommend it. I mean, I don't know if it was the first 3 seconds or the first 3 hours, but it was, I thought I was having an exorcism, and it was just crazy. And then my wife was there, and there was a doctor there, and I said, how long was I out? And they said, 7 minutes. I'm like, you're shitting. I saw all that 7 minutes.
Whoa.
Because it was a crazy, and it's one of those things where you can have someone describe it to you, but they're not going to do it justice because it can't really be put into words. But I'm convinced that I don't know if it's the other side. I don't know if it's heaven. It wasn't fiery, so I'm a little happy about that. But yeah, it was just, it's a really good for, and I think more people have a lot of stress than they want to realize. It's anyone that's seen someone get injured, God forbid, see someone get killed. My personal experience shooting people that like 7 years out or 8 years out from combat. And I'm wondering, I think about some people that I killed. I'm like, if we would have met under different circumstances, we had a cup of coffee and laughed. Like, what was my problem with this dude? You know, I was like, I'm definitely going crazy. I need to get some therapy. And it worked. And everyone I know has not everyone I know, but a lot of guys have gone through it. And it is remarkable. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I can't imagine the trauma that comes from that. You know, everybody's had some sort of trauma throughout their life. There's not many that was their job to be in the situations that you were in and presented the opportunities to have these things that could stay with you for the rest of your life if you can't unpack them in an appropriate way.
Yeah, and the first key to it, I know it sounds stupid, but the first key is admitting there's an issue. And I mean, if I think back to it, and there's in 2007, we're fighting at the height of the war in Iraq. If we only killed 11 people in one night, we're like, well, that was a waste of time. Wow. Like that, and you think it's normal because everyone's doing it. It's not normal. They're asking a lot out of you. And so once you make peace with yourself and hopefully with, you know, whatever demons you have, and even like with some of the, you know, I'm not afraid to say that I take therapy. And even like if I see something shift or something move in the house, I'm like, oh, the demons are here. They're like, it's not your demons, it's your friends. And they're just fucking with you. They're standing over you, pushing that point because that you know them and they're messing with it. It's kind of an eye opener. And it might be bullshit, but it worked. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that as many people, especially former military people dealing with PTSD, as many people who say it work, I would say that it's not coincidental. It's not any type of placebo effect. There's something real there.
It's a search of your soul. It's stuff that you're not hiding from yourself anymore. It's awesome.
Yep. What was your first car? In Montana, it had to be a truck, right?
No, I had a 1984 Buick Skylark. It was blue, and I named it Zeus.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah.
What's your favorite restaurant?
Hunt Fish Club in New York City.
Nice. What about Nashville?
Near Nashville, I love, Jeff Ruby's for steaks, nice. And then Loveless Cafe for chicken and waffles.
Man, Jeff Ruby's a former podcast guest, a good buddy of mine. So
yeah, great.
He'll be fired up. You said that.
All right,
Last one for me. What's next for Rob O'Neill?
Well, I just started a beer company to have fun with some veterans, Armed Forces Brewing Company. And we're making a beer for each branch. So we have, right now we have special hops, which is IPA, and then a cat shot for pilots. And we're making we just did a commercial. It's on my social media, and we're getting some shit because we're trying to be funny and some people didn't think it was funny. So, but nobody likes to see a veteran fail more than another veteran. It's crazy. I don't know why they get pissed at it. It's like, just join the team then. I'll redo it. But the beer company, I'm working on the hot sauce still. Just trying to do some stuff where I'm not flying every single day. I was going to 300 cities a year, doing speeches, doing 2-a-days, but like one in Lansing and one in Detroit, breakfast and dinner, and then flying to Seattle. And it wasn't like a tour. It was do one here, then here, then here, then here, just flying all over the place. So I want to slow that down and hang out by the pool.
Yeah, and I think the quarantine reminded a lot of people that it was time to slow down, maybe get off the road a little bit.
Yeah.
A little more time rooted. So I'm glad to hear it. Hopefully this virtual world of Zooms where you're in a different state than me now, but we can connect. Hopefully that leads to maybe the same amount of speaking, but less time on the road for you.
I'm feeling it. I got to show you something. I made this because of all the Zoom calls we've been doing. Okay. Because people will forget that you can't hear them for some reason. So I made this coffee cup.
I like that. That's good stuff. For those,
it just tells them they're on mute. It's pretty funny.
That is good stuff. Rob mentioned his social media. He's at Mick Hooya. And yep. How'd you get that name?
That was a joke because right as Twitter came out, one of my friends said, look, man, there's this thing called Twitter, and all you do is talk shit to people. No one knows who you are. It's hilarious. It's a goof. So just make a fake name. Because of my Irish heritage, I put Mick and then Hooya, because we say that in SEAL training, Mick Hooya. I thought it sounded funny. And then one night, my name leaked. It's Killing Bin Laden. And I went from 7 followers to like 10,000. And I'm like, oh, great. Now I'm Mick Hooya. I don't even know what that means. No one can even pronounce it. But it's that's how I got that kind of funny.
There's no going back from that. One more for the listeners, only because I think this is fascinating. Tell really quickly how SEAL Team 6 got its name.
When it started out, there was SEAL Team 1 on the West Coast, SEAL Team 2 on the East Coast. And then Richard Marcinko commissioned SEAL Team 6 because he knew the Russians would say, there's 1, 2, and 6. Where the hell are 3, 4, and 5? Which is just a good psychological move. I like it.
I absolutely love that. Everyone's like, there's got to be some significance to the 6. What is it? Because there's not 3, 4, and 5. No, it's to mess with the Russians.
Yeah. And he was – that's another great book. Speaking of books, I shouldn't be pushing it too much, but he wrote a book called Rogue Warrior. And he got a lot of shit for writing a book because he didn't get it cleared, but he said it's fiction, in quotes. But he talked about SEAL Team 6, and it's a even though he got some shit for it, there's a lot of really good dudes that joined the Navy because of his book. The only part I think he was full of shit is he said everyone at SEAL Team 6 would bench 400 pounds. That's not the case. That's a lot of weight to be pushing up.
Can you do 4? Could you have
done? No. I did 350. It was my max I ever did, and that was it for me.
I was an NFL offensive lineman. I benched 225 pounds, 30 times at the combine. My most I ever did for one rep max was 405. So that'd be really impressive if all the SEALs,
because everybody no.
Because they can't carry around 310 like I
that's
was.
True. Right? Yeah. Well, that's too, when people would say, what are you doing for a workout? I'm saying I do whatever I need to do to carry one of my friends in all his gear after he got shot. That's what I'm doing.
Wow.
And if you want to get good at pull-ups, just do more pull-ups. Keep it simple.
Yep. Keep it simple. That's the motto of this podcast today. No, this was absolutely phenomenal. I've looked forward to this for a long time.
Yeah, me too.
Can't thank you enough for your service. Look forward to good times down the road. Everybody give Rob a follow if you're not already. He's as entertaining and funny on Instagram and not always 100% serious as he was today on here, which is great. And yeah, as you read his book, he talks about one of the best things for getting through tough times in life is a sense of humor.
That's a humor. If you got to be able to laugh. If you lose your laughter, you've lost everything.
Absolutely. Rob, thank you so much for the time.
Awesome. Thank you. This is fun.
This episode is also brought to you by Punched Energy Chews, and these have become a favorite product of mine for energy and fitness. They use a patented formula with tons of scientific studies, and they start with pure green Arabica coffee bean caffeine. It improves your physical and mental performance, increases your metabolism, helps burn calories and body fat, and they also help boost your immunity, which is very important at this time because they're a great source of vitamin C. They're also ultra low glycemic, no spikes, no bounces, and no crashes. What you're going to do is go to punchedenergy.com, use code ERICWOOD20 for 20% off. Give them a try, link in the show notes.